Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout each month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with Laura Gonzalez, and she alternates her weeks in English and the next week in Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I will continue to be the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesday of each month. Wednesdays features Nature Spirituality with none other than Selena Fox. The third Friday of each month features Blue Marble, an environmental and eagle activist show. We have such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and I hope you try them all. Tonight, I'm very excited about our guest on Circle Talk. We're going to take a journey of compassion, authenticity, and spiritual connectedness as author Durgas Alon Doriel discusses his new book, Worthy As You Are, Affirmations, Meditation, and Journaling. We're going to learn how to change our everyday thoughts from negative to nourishing to embrace our authentic selves. Durgas Alon Doriel is from San Francisco, California. He's a licensed clinical social worker and a certified holistic health practitioner working in private practice. He's a former practitioner of magic with more than 20 years of experience, formal practitioner of magic with more than 20 years of experience, and has practiced yoga and meditation for over 15 years. He holds a master's degree in social welfare from UCLA. For more information, here's his website and how to get some information on him. You can go to his website at www.DurgasAlonDoriel, that's DurgasAlonDoriel.com. He can also be found on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, we'll have to ask him about that, and Facebook. Let's welcome Durgas to Circle Talk. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so pleased to be here. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I loved your book.
Thank you.
Parts of it were very brave. Parts of it, I felt like the gods, there was a reason why the gods had me have you on now. It's obviously that I needed to read those things. And so it's just really exciting. And tell us about the process. Your book's just recently been released, correct?
Yeah, it just came out on the 8th of September. Yeah. Just a little while ago.
And this is your second book, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep. My first book is called The Little Work, Magic to Transform Your Everyday Life, which is also from Llewellyn, came out in 2020. And that was a book about deepening spiritual practice and magic. Yeah.
All right. So, and you practice a form of earth-based spirituality you shared with me.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I would say that earth-based spirituality is very central to my outlook on life and my spiritual practice. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So, and again, I love this book and I learned a lot. What was the catalyst? What was the inspiration? Why did you want to write this particular book?
Yeah, so basically where Worthy As You Are really came from is that, you know, I had, like so many of us, a lot of rocky, turbulent experiences in my life when I was growing up. And in my early adulthood, I had the good fortune to go through an intensive spiritual training program and also to study holistic health. And both of those two things together really helped me find a very profound sense of healing and spiritual connectedness, both to a degree that wasn't even really on my radar before, or that I didn't even really know was possible for me. And so after that, that's really what inspired me to start writing, was feeling like I wanted to share that with other people in the hopes that it might provide them with a similar or even deeper sense of connectedness or healing. And then specifically, you know, a lot of the stuff that I went through growing up, I was bullied relentlessly for a long time, things like that. A lot of the messages I experienced were very against the notion of being worthy as you are or good enough as yourself. And so, you know, as my spiritual path helped me really connect with the parts of my authenticity that showed me that those messages weren't true, I really wanted to share that with people. The other thing I wanted to say too is that worthy as you are is really a mixture of what I've learned and come to know as a therapist and my practice as a spiritual seeker. So part of the other reason why I wanted to write this particular book is I feel like cognitive behavioral therapy, which is the main type of therapy I practice and one of the most popular methods today, it's often portrayed as being sort of a little bit robotic or sterile, and sometimes it can be. But I think there's so much value in it. And then, you know, a lot of self-help material has a lot of the spirit there, but doesn't necessarily have some of the groundedness of the CBT skills. But if you put them together, there's a lot of really rich, rich potential there. And that's what I do in my personal life, and that's also what I do as a therapist. So I just kind of wanted to share that with people too. So, you know, I think it's sort of what happens in the self-help world is like every generation people write books that incorporate the gold from the past, but also sort of clean up some of the stuff that maybe was a little problematic. And that was also what I wanted to do with this. Yeah.
And I will say your book, parts of it are very brave. You are very open about things that went on into your life. And that takes a type of courageousness and braveness to do this. And, I will give our listeners a hint why, another reason why I really like this book. This book could have been very dry and heavy. And the way you have written it, you give, at least when I read it, you give me information, and then you give me exercises, you give me affirmations, you give me things to do so I can put what I just learned into practice. And that is really great for readers to know, because this is a book you can read and you can put to practice the concepts really quickly.
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear that you didn't feel like it was really dry. I'm thrilled to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and especially a lot of spiritual books, magical, you know, can be really heavy. And sometimes, you know, people, you know, when I teach a class or even myself, I'll read something and I'm like, wow, that was heavy. I have no idea what to do with this thought form I have. And you do a really good job of having kind of homework that, you know, and journaling and different things to automatically, you know, make you use those concepts. And so I think that was really, really, really good.
Thank you.
So
go ahead. Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that.
I mean, the first part of the book does have a lot of technical information in it. And one thing I actually say in the introduction to part one is like some people, and I'm one of them, really like to know how the healing system they're working with works. That like helps build motivation and just sort of desire to do it and understanding. And other people are not as wedded to that. So I was kind of like, you know, if you are one of the people who wants to know how it works, here's all of that for you. And if you're one of the people who doesn't care, like skim this section, it's totally fine. Part two and three are very different from this. Yeah. But I'm glad the exercises were helpful.
I'm one of those people that usually read a book and then I go back and reread it and write down things I like. So I really enjoyed it real briefly. And I know it's such a major part of the book and it wasn't that familiar to me, it's really kind of the frame group. Explain to us exactly what cognitive behavioral therapy, which is CBT.
Yes. So cognitive behavioral therapy is grounded in the notion that how we think and how we act affects how we feel. Now, this concept has been in ancient wisdom from around the world. You see it in the teachings of the Buddha. You see it in the teachings of Hinduism. You can see it in Stoic philosophy. You can see it in Shakespeare. But what CBT has done with it is has taken this information that how we think affects how we feel, how we think affects how we perceive the world, and turned it into an everyday practice you can use in your life to question unhealthy or negative thoughts that are hindering your well-being. And that's really what it's about. Is so what we do in cognitive behavioral therapy formally in practice is there's a lot of questioning of thoughts and planning activities that feel helpful, nourishing, pleasurable. And the way that I actually break it down in the book is that the ratios, you want to think and act on behalf of your well-being as much as you can, and you want to challenge or stop the thoughts and actions or diminish the thoughts and actions that work against your well-being, and just kind of being mindful of that in a general way. And that's really what CBT is about, is that we have a lot of power over how well we feel, not absolute, right? Difficult circumstances can certainly happen, but we do have some power over how we feel if we pay attention to how we think and act and direct those areas of life in a certain way.
And I wrote, again, I journal, important, and I had several nuggets of treasures that I found in your book that I wrote, and I love this one that it says, and I put myself, remember, no one plants a majority of what's in their inner garden.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so what I want to say about that is that, so I use a framework in the book, a metaphor of the mind as a garden. And part of the reason why I do that is because, like I was saying before, CBT sometimes is thought of as being very sterile or robotic, and that actually turns a lot of people off. But in my experience, it's really more of the inner nature, you know, this inner environment that we have. And we plant seeds of supportive thoughts, and we can weed out unhealthy or negative ones. And then it's just this organic process where you want to take care of the soil that's there. And so when I say nobody plants the majority of what's in their inner garden, what that really means is that by the time that we're adults, so much of what we think has been shaped by external influences. I mean, when we're little kids, when we're little kids, we're just like sponges who absorb all of this stuff around us. And then a lot of what we absorb affects how we feel and how we perceive reality. And then the question that we face as adults, one question is, well, what do I want to do with all of that? Am I going to keep going with what I've been doing, or am I going to try to question, challenge, and shift some of this? And that work is really what inner gardening and the gist of the book is about, making those kinds of changes where we feel motivated to and how.
Absolutely. And it's funny, I'm a grandmother, so I've been doing a lot of reading and about, you know, children or whatever. And I read something that was really sad, but it goes into this whole thought process. It says, if you ask a child at 5 or 6 in a classroom, who here's a great singer? Everybody will raise their hand. If you ask the same group of children at age 10, who's a great singer? No one or very few will raise their hand. So in a very short period of time, we teach children they can't sing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we start very young doing those kind of things without meaning to.
Yeah, well, and some of it's unintentional, some of it's subconscious, and some of it's so, you know, things people are picking up from their environment without necessarily even realizing that's the message. Like if you watch a TV show, for example, and everybody on the show is thin, what message is that sending?
Absolutely.
You know, or the only person who's not thin is like the comic figure. What message is that sent? Right. So there's all different types of scenarios in popular entertainment that send messages, and we absorb them as children, whether we consciously think of them or not. And they shape how we perceive reality, feel about ourselves, and feel about other people and life. Yeah.
Absolutely. You also use a tool that that I've worked with, but you made me think of a little bit different that I really like, is that you use affirmations. And I'm an affirmation person. So they make me happy. And I have several, but I have a set of affirmations that I've been doing for like 30 years. So,
wow.
Talk about affirmations and how they can help us.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the first part of inner gardening is noticing the negative thoughts or the unhealthy thoughts that are standing in the way of our well-being. And those we question and challenge. But then the second part is planting affirmative thoughts in their place, compassionate thoughts, supportive thoughts. And my orientation to affirmations is a little different from how they're traditionally, mm-hmm. conventionally presented. And what that is about is that a lot of people struggle with affirmations, particularly ones that feel like they're very far away from where they are emotionally. You know, a mm-hmm. traditional affirmation for anxiety could be, I am always safe. Well, a lot of people
right.
who have really bad anxiety, when they affirm
never
that,
feel safe.
They feel like it's
yeah.
right. They feel like it's
yeah.
not true, and it makes them feel less and less safe. So what my work is about in affirmations is finding a thought that maybe you can believe that feels better than you do now, enough to help you out some. And then you just keep walking in the direction of where you want to go with the topic. So, for example, an affirmation for anxiety I share in the book is I have effective coping skills. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what really helped me was recognizing, you know, when push comes to shove, I'm able to handle myself in a difficult situation. So if I'm always safe doesn't feel like it's working, what about I have effective coping skills? That's a thought I could believe. And it was ultimately
mm-hmm.
very powerful for me. Yeah. So to me, though, when I was talking earlier about how CBT is so good about questioning thoughts and self-help is so good about some other stuff. One of the things I think self-help is good about is just the notion of affirmations, that it makes a difference to say supportive things to ourselves, with the caveat that I add about as long as we believe them or don't struggle too much to believe them. But yeah, to
mm-hmm.
me, the affirmations are the seeds we plant in the inner garden, and they have so much power. I mean, I have really affirmations can be treated like a joke when they're the sort of over-the-top traditional
mm-hmm.
ones, even though many people have benefited from them. But I just,
mm-hmm.
I'm always trying to champion affirmations because they have really made a difference for me. And I mean ones
mm-hmm.
like, I have effective coping skills. It's okay to
mm-hmm.
need help. It's okay to
mm-hmm.
make mistakes. I mean, sometimes these are
mm-hmm.
things we might intellectually believe, but emotionally, subconsciously, we don't. We need help, and we judge ourselves critically for that. But if we just affirm
right.
to ourselves it's okay to need help, eventually that pattern shifts, and then we become healthier and freer because of it.
Right. And I think what your mouth says, your head hears. When your head hears, your heart believes.
Mm-hmm.
A big person that, yeah, and I say them out loud. So.
Oh, nice.
So because, you know, I'm a magical practitioner and I believe in vibration. And so, yeah. I think that they're, and for me, and we'll talk about meditation in just a second, that one of my affirmations, I am enough. So,
mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. So just to remind, because, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the subject of magic, I really think affirmations are spells. So
yes.
approaching them that way makes sense. Yeah.
Right. And you're right. A lot of people, because I've taught classes and I teach public classes and people feel like it's funny because my partner comes from a ceremonial magical background and I did not.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought, you know, it's kind of like fluffy stuff, like where's the deep magic or whatever. But I'm just telling you, you can't say that. You know, although I say my daily spiritual practice is about 3 times a week now, but you can't say those things all the time. And it's deep magic. It changes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
So, and as someone who recently was told by a physician that I ignore my body's signals and not doing self-care well, I really enjoyed your book. In fact, something that I've done and I've kind of let go that I'm going back to is, your book does a really good job talking about meditation and actually shows different postures. Talk to us about meditation.
Yeah, meditation has been a part of my life daily since 2005. So it's been quite the journey at this point. And basically, one of the central parts of the book is about how powerful connecting with the divine can be. in a palpable mm-hmm. way and connecting with spirit. And for me, meditation is one of the places where I've most experienced that firsthand. Specifically, the book is about heart meditation. In Hinduism, mm-hmm. it's taught that the heart is the seat of the soul, you know, that there's a powerful doorway to connecting with spirit right there. And that's really mm-hmm. what that meditation is about is, you know, it also gives us a different relationship to our thoughts, to our impulses. I mean, there are so many ability to relax, ability to let things go for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many benefits to it. Yeah. So it's really in there for those two reasons. One, but also because it made such a difference for me. I mean, my practice was a combination of ritual and meditation, and that,
mm-hmm.
Combined with time in nature working every week really gave me such a different palpable feeling of spirit. And that is what has made such a difference also in my healing work, because I think that, you know, when we can perceive our own divinity, our own mm-hmm. holiness, it really shifts the healing practice, because suddenly it's different, right? It's a different mm-hmm. process if you know that you are, you know, radiant with spirit, like mm-hmm. a plant is, or a tree, or an animal. Yeah.
You yeah. also do
and
a
I was
really
gonna
good
say
job
too,
of.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say you do a really good job of having a wide definition of deity, and you use the word mm-hmm. spirit, and you acknowledge that for many people the word God triggers them, and so
yes.
you do
yeah.
a really good job of saying, you know, don't let this word or this word dissuade you. You know, just, you know, reframe it into another concept. I thought you did a really good job with that.
Thank you. I tried really hard with the book to leave that stuff open. You know, I
mm-hmm.
I share what I use, what works for me, but I was really trying to be like, you know, if you need to modify this language some to work for you, then modify it. I mean, it doesn't matter what I believe. It's can you
right.
find something for yourself that's going to help you feel connected in a way that facilitates your healing and well-being. And that doesn't have to be what I believe at all in terms of a one-to-one with my spiritual beliefs and someone else's. Yeah. But for
mm-hmm.
me, I do really, I personally really benefit from, you know, the earth is pervaded with the spirit of the Great Mother. That kind
mm-hmm.
of all life is pervaded with that. And that's where I really, really come from. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I wrote my notes in my journal. You, and you talk a little about those of us who practice magic and the law of attraction, and you, something that I have a real core belief in you, but I liked your word. You said grounded possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. And I really like you do a great thing. Tell people that's great that you practice magic and you do all these things and you can do rituals so the cows come home, but if you don't do a resume and send it somewhere, you ain't getting a job.
Right.
So,
you
do a really good
yeah.
job of putting all of that together.
Thank you. Thank you. So I felt a really strong sense of responsibility, and I also talked about this in the little work too, to clarify, because I do talk about manifestation, and it's been
mm-hmm.
such a core part of my experience, manifestational magic, to be really clear about this isn't victim blaming, this isn't anti-science.
Right.
You know, there are some people who have very extreme beliefs that all of your thoughts manifest everything that you experience. And I'm not one of them, you know, but there is a middle ground. Right.
Right.
But there's a middle ground where you believe, yes, there is something to all of this, but it doesn't make sense for me to blame myself for everything going on in my life or
mm-hmm.
other things are real too. You know, so grounded possibility to me is really about like, is that middle ground? You know,
mm-hmm.
there is a benefit to thinking thoughts that support my intentions, and there is magic to that. And at the same time, like, if I want to manifest a job, I need to send off some resumes and go to the interviews. And if I have a health condition and there's a treatment for it, let's go to the doctor, right? Like,
Absolutely.
It's all, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, I totally agree, and I like that, and, sometimes people perceive the metaphysical way or the emotional way, the
mm-hmm.
easier way, And they and right. I always tell people, you know, I live on the physical plane. I don't live in the astral plane. I live on the physical plane. And so you have to
right.
honor and do the physical work. You know, the mundane
yeah.
life comes too. So,
right, absolutely.
But yeah, and again, the law of attraction has, of the Hermetic principles, has gotten a lot of attention in many, you know what I mean? It's kind of vogue and people know about
yep.
it. But I don't think that and I thought you did a really good job with that. Everybody thinks of the law of attraction as far as getting great things. But for me, it also
right.
works the opposite. If I just want to
yeah.
think negative, that's what I'm going to gather.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and so, you know, one thing I talk about a lot in the book is compassionate thinking and the power
mm-hmm.
of compassionate thinking. And one of the things that I think of in terms of the power of compassionate thinking is, you know, the more we learn how to just be kind and empathetic to ourselves, we don't have
mm-hmm.
to think super positive thoughts, but just being kind to ourselves, like speaking to ourselves as we would a dear loved one, that in and of itself is magical. And over time, that starts to move our thinking in a direction that supports our well-being and the manifestation of our healthy intentions, you know? And so it's like, I think sometimes when people are learning law of attraction or manifestational magic, there can be this worry of, oh my God, I have to think super positive thoughts all the time. And it's like, not in my
right.
experience. And as long as you just start moving your thinking in the direction of being kind and empathetic to yourself, to the degree of your power, that will help manifest good things in your life that you want. And again, I'm not one of those people who believes our power is absolute. There are other people who believe that, which
mm-hmm.
is where we run into the stuff where it can seem victim blaming or anti-science. But
right.
there are also ways to believe in this that are not that. And that's part of where I'm coming from here.
Yeah. You talk a little bit about divination, which surprised me and I enjoyed. Talk a little bit about divination for yourself. And how it plays into this.
Yeah, so one of the things that I share is that before doing a big magical working or even
mm-hmm.
like if one feels like it's not working, I would do divination to sort of see like, is this a good idea to try or is this a good idea to keep trying? You know, I happen to come from a place with all of this where I'm working on my own personal spiritual evolution, right? So I want to
mm-hmm.
do things that seem like they're good for me and good for others. And in my experience, one of the ways to gather that information is through divination. And another point I make sort of throughout the book is, you know, my experience is that we all have access to a powerful, profound inner knowing and an inner North Star of divine consciousness and divine intelligence that's always there. And this is something we can learn how to access. And one of the ways of learning how to receive that information can be through something like tarot
mm-hmm.
or other divinatory practices. And it's beautiful because, you know, it's just connecting with a deeper part of ourselves in my belief system. Again, everybody can believe what they want here. Like, I'm not saying other people have to believe that, but the way that I see it is as this sort of continuum of spirit, and we're part of that, and so is this information or this flow or higher self or what have you. And divination is a way of getting in touch with that. And I like that divination systems have some, they're not like a total free-for-all, right? Like if you're studying
mm-hmm.
the tarot, it's flexible, but it's not infinitely flexible, which is I
right.
think actually helpful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
well, because sometimes one of the challenges with divination is that people can start sort of like, are you telling yourself what you want to hear or are you actually receiving?
Right.
And that's where practice is very helpful. Yeah.
But it is interesting when you're searching for answers or you want to know something, when you do divination, and I will be honest to say I've like, okay, I don't like that reading. I'll do another one. And when you
mm-hmm.
keep getting the same things, I mean, the universe is trying
yeah.
to tell you something. You're just not
right.
listening.
Yeah, for sure.
So you talk a little bit about mindfulness, which I think sometimes
mm-hmm.
that's hard for some of us to
mm-hmm.
be in the moment
mm-hmm.
and not rush
right.
around. And as someone who was just recently told I'm burning the candle at both ends, so I really also
yeah.
is a chapter I'm going to be rereading after this podcast. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so mindfulness, the way that I use it in the book is the way that it's often applied in psychology, which is where, mm-hmm. but it comes from Buddhism and Hinduism, which is where we're really trying to just be present non-judgmentally, non-conceptually in the moment. So you're just being with the action that you're doing and just observing, or even just meditating and observing. And mm-hmm. it's about, it helps us to go deeper than our thoughts and our feelings, and it facilitates relaxation, and it's great for dealing with anxiety or worry or anger, things like that. It's a wonderful skill to develop. And one thing I did want to say too is that, you know, once you start talking about this kind of stuff, it can sound like this huge, laborious undertaking. And mm-hmm. in my experience, it's really not. It's like what I tell people as a therapist is if you just spend, like if you just challenge three negative thoughts, a negative thought every other day, for example, or once a mm-hmm. day, you know, a short 5-minute process of just questioning one thought, eventually that, and not too long of an eventually, that will create a habit of you asking yourself whether or not the thoughts you're thinking are true, whether or not the negative mm-hmm. thoughts are true. And once that habit's there, it starts going by itself. So it's not this laborious thing, and mindfulness is like that too. If you're even mindful for just a couple of minutes a day or a couple of minutes every other day, it starts to foster that ability to be mindfully present. So it's just about consistency more than, oh, I have to, you know, spend 2 hours a day on all of these things.
I'm trying to remember.
It can be very fruitful. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, little things, and I'm a planner girl, so I will plan things, and I've actually gotten a planner. It's almost become like a memory planner, and I'm trying to, every day or at least in the week, go through and write down the little things. You know, my grandchild walked, or you know what I mean, that you forget, mm-hmm. and because, you know, a pipe breaks and so you forget all this, and so I have found that has almost become a type of mindfulness. It has me relived, and it actually pulls into me gratitude. When you write mm-hmm. down, you know, the things that happened in your life, and you look and you're like, you know, I can't really be upset about that flat tire because look at all these other blessings I have. So mm-hmm. I think mindfulness helps with gratitude.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I actually have in the affirmation section, but I think this was added. I think you had the advanced copy, and this was added after that.
Oh.
I put in a gratitude journal exercise.
Oh.
And the reason why I put that in there is because I have been doing it for, oh my goodness, 10 months or something at this point, and it's been so mm-hmm. profound. What it is mm-hmm. write down three things a day that I feel grateful mm-hmm. for, and what I didn't know was going to happen was it's made me so much more appreciative of the things that I already like I mm-hmm. I thought, oh well, I feel like I'm pretty grateful, we'll see what this does, I don't know what it's going to do. And one of the things that it did is, in addition to just making me more aware of what I'm grateful for, it made me more aware of my enjoyment, deeper in my enjoyment. Like the mm-hmm. joke I have about this is, like, tea has ended up on my gratitude journal a lot. Because, you know, if you're writing three things mm-hmm. down a day, eventually you're like, okay, well, tea. But now I look forward to the tea that I drink every day. I'm more grateful for it. I like it more because it's in this journal. And I had no idea that that was going to happen. But, like, I was already drinking it. I already liked it. But now I'm, like, I will be, like, excited going to bed thinking about, oh, I'm really looking forward to drinking that tea again tomorrow. And that's because of that practice. So sometimes little practices like this can really increase our overall well-being or our everyday sense of comfort and nourishment in our lives.
Yeah, and I will tell you, I for sure have reactions and get upset, but it mm-hmm. for some reason has helped me reframe. For example, I had car problems. And so it was like, oh, it was an inconvenient time. You know, I just started a job, and didn't really want to spend the money, yada, yada, yada. And then immediately that night when I was journaling, I immediately said my gratitude was, you know what, it was a hassle, but I have the ability to get the money to get my car fixed, and a lot of people were
right.
not. And I am very grateful
yeah.
for that. So I do think it teaches mm-hmm. you to reframe quickly. Do you know what I mean? And to look at things
yes,
maybe
absolutely.
A little bit differently.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, because also I'll say along those lines, things that have been on my gratitude journal, modern plumbing, hot and cold running water, refrigeration.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, yeah, so many generations didn't have all of this. And, you know, I like to watch TV shows and films that depict older times accurately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so humbling, you know, and it can really be such a source of gratitude to thank goodness. Like we, yes, absolutely. Lots of modern blessings in that way.
Absolutely. So, and again, I said a lot of part of your book was very brave. You talk with candor about your childhood, and you talked a lot about sexuality and gender, which I thought you did a very good job of, because that is a very hard subject to approach. And you you talk about body positivities and someone who's dieted on and off her whole life. You do a really good job at that. Talk about some of those things with us and why they're important.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think that these are all areas of life where we get messages that we're not good enough as we are. You know, that there's one way to be or a couple ways to be. And if we're not that way, then we're not worthy or we're not as worthy. And sometimes there's a spectrum. And, you know, even if we intellectually know that, like, Hollywood and advertising and fashion drives body image perception, and it's, like, sort of decided in a boardroom and things like that, that doesn't mean that we're somehow insulated from experiencing insecurity related to that. Right. And the messaging can be so pervasive. And that's where I think it's just really important to affirm to ourselves other truths or truths that help us release some of those harmful stories. And so that section of the book has 9 of what I call affirmative talks, which are processes of exploring some of these issues and affirming really healthy beliefs in the place of some of these harmful ones we grow up with to help us feel more comfortable with our authenticity. You know, and one of the things that I was sharing, like, in the section about sexuality and the section about gender is, you know, I'm a gay male who's gender nonconforming as a child and was really bullied for that. And the thing is, that was just me. You know, that's just who I am. That's just how I was. It was all very authentic. And personally, I think in the broader question of what is healing for our world right now, or at least the America, a part of that is let's just let people be who they are and embrace that.
Right.
And recognize that, you know, if you're authentically gay, that's great. That's just you. And that's, you know, that's what spirit has given to you. And that's beautiful. Right. And that it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. And so one of the things that was very important for me in this book was to say to people who were queer or gender nonconforming or trans that, you know, we're sacred this way too. We're not sacred. And then this is a problem. We're just sacred. We're worthy as we are. And for people whose body size doesn't match the supermodel figure, same thing. You know, this is culturally constructed stuff. I mean, if we were all born 500 years ago, we'd have a totally different concept of body image. So, you know, recognizing that and trying to weed some of that from our inner gardens and plant these affirmative, compassionate thoughts in their place can be very healing.
Right. And again, and like I said, you do a really good job. And it's funny because you reflect about your own mother, which was, again, very brave and courageous and very healing. And even myself, and, you know, I would consider myself very liberal, but I have a small grandchild and we're at, you know, Dollar Tree and everybody's buying stuff. And my grandson picks up something pink, and I will tell you, I'm ashamed. My first thought is, don't you want blue? I mean, that is so ingrained. Mm-hmm. And he's like, can I have this one? I'm like, honey, that's great. You take that. But that is a thought. Do you know what I mean? that gender thing, especially, I'm probably much older than you, that is really ingrained deep within us. And my daughter does a very, very good job of you be you. She says that 1,000 times a day. You, whatever you want is okay. Float your own boat.
Wonderful.
So, but it, that is very, you do a really good job, obviously, of forgiving your mother and understanding where she came from. But as someone who considers themselves very liberal and all kinds of friends, I'm kind of shocked at some of my immediate thoughts.
Yeah, well, you know, this conditioning goes really deep. And it's very, very much something that is in the air. And when we grow up with it, it's infused into us. And it's work sometimes, you know, for to really – but I think that, you know, the beautiful thing is recognizing it and then choosing to do something else, you know, and something that honors other people's authenticity. I mean, there's a photo of me in my mother's heels when I was 2 years old. I mean, that's just who I was. And that was and is authentic to me. And, you know, if we could just sort of let people be who they authentically are and have that be fine and celebrate that, I mean, wow, how much better would so much be, right? So, but it's a lot of it starts with this kind of work, recognizing what the issues are, weeding those thoughts, challenging those thoughts, and then affirming a new perspective for us, one that aligns with something that maybe we have a deeper sense of being spiritually true, like that everybody is authentically, you know, divine as they are, and that all of these, you know, whatever body size they have, if that's what they authentically have, then that's beautiful. Great.
I read a book again. I've been studying. I'm a voracious reader. So I read a book and the author was saying, you know, gender and this and that and all this has become a big thing. And he said, there's always been 100 different types of gender in nature.
Right.
There's always been different combinations, you know, same sex plants that can reproduce. It's like we're slowly catching up to what nature has always known.
Right.
But there's infinite possibilities.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, sometimes people are afraid of change or things that strike them as new, but it's not necessarily new. It's just a question of what was their language for? What did people feel free to express? I mean, it's not that there are more gay people now. It's that it's more socially acceptable to be gay.
Right.
And I think that, you know, as we move in the direction of as a society, hopefully, where people are allowed to be their authentic selves and celebrated as that, a lot of this stuff's going to work itself out. Because a lot of the problems come from trying to push people to be other than they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when there's more acceptance, then a lot of that stuff just sort of evens out.
Right. And again, you do a really good job talking that. And all that acceptance starts with self-love. You have to be comfortable with who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, part of where I come from with this, too, from the spiritual perspective is when, in my experience, when I was able to really know that I'm a divine being and that everybody else is divine too, and that all the plants of this world, the trees of this world, the animals of this world, everything that's living on this world, everything that's not living too, is sacred right now, then that suddenly makes other people's lives even more important to me. You know what I mean? To really want other people to have a comfortable quality of life. So self-love in this sense, it's not a vanity kind of thing. It's not a narcissism kind of thing. It's a knowing your spirit and knowing that you are deserving. And as you know that of yourself, you know it of other people too. And that's part of where there's even a sort of positive social change element to this work, because really, if everything is sacred and you treat it that way, what a world that creates, right?
Absolutely. And you know the old axiom, you can't really love someone else until you've learned to love yourself first.
Well, and what are you loving, right? When you come to love yourself, what is it that you're loving? And my experience is that the further we dive down that rabbit hole, the more what we come to is this spiritual depth. And you love it in yourself, you love it in other people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and it's funny, in my own family, you also have a chapter, if I remember, on like money and productivity and
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
material goods or whatever. And it's funny because I have two different, you know, I have a child who's, both of my children are successful, but one is very financially successful. And my other child, he basically said, I want a comfortable life. You know, I don't have to worry about paying my electricity, but he wants
mm-hmm.
time to, you know, to, he's a youth minister at his church. He does whatever. And it's interesting the choices that people make. And you know what? Both choices are okay.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of what I have in those sections is that, you know, what works for you is what works for you. You know, for
mm-hmm.
some people, they want to have a really bustling career that actually works for them. And for other
right.
people,
feeds
it doesn't work
right.
at all. Right.
Right.
Exactly. And if it doesn't work for you, that's okay. You're not less than or broken or faulty because, for example, a societal idea about how wealthy or productive or conventionally successful you are doesn't work for you. That's just not, that just doesn't light you up, and that's okay, you know, because this goes back into the, it's so easy to judge ourselves based on
mm-hmm.
societal standards, cultural standards, communal standards, and do they even really fit? Did they ever, you know?
Yeah.
Where do they come from? It's all part of the questioning process of inner gardening. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I was kind of shocked. I found it interesting that you talked about in this country, how much more we work in other countries, and I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially in terms of vacation time, yes. The times that
right.
I've been abroad with people from, like, Italy, and,
mm-hmm.
They've just been stunned at, and things like it's illegal to work on the weekend in France, which is actually
true.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
I mean, I think there are some exceptions maybe, but, like,
right.
yeah, it's like it's just this whole other way of looking at things. And, some of my friends from Europe have, I don't know, 25, 30 vacation days a year, and they're supposed to take them.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
it's not this situation where maybe you have
you get in trouble.
18
yeah.
days a year. Right. But you're really only supposed to take 2 weeks of vacation at that. Yeah. No, it's not like that at all. Yeah. Some of that stuff is
absolutely.
Very cultural.
Yeah. My previous job, they up front denied vacation because they paid you for it. And so it was
right.
great. You made money, but then you're just exhausted. And what I found is people started getting sick.
Yep.
You know, you can't go without being refreshed for very long.
Right. Very true. Very true.
So what do you, like I said, I really enjoyed your book. And as you can tell, I've got lots
Thank
of
you.
Notes and I'm going to go back and read it. What are some thoughts that you would want people to know about the book or how to go in it or give us some thoughts about your book?
Yeah, well, I would just say that it's really a book for people who want to do some deep inner healing work related to their own worthiness and releasing harmful stories, usually from society or family, about different areas of life or the entertainment industry. You know, so it's like, there are those 9 areas of life, body image, sexuality, gender, career, money, home, self-love, you know, things like that. And this book really teaches us it doesn't just offer processes to release those particular thoughts, but it teaches the overall system, right? Just generally in life, how to question unhealthy thoughts in an effective way and how to create effective affirmations to replace them, you know, how to connect with spirit in our everyday lives in a way that's going to feel nourishing. And then also in the third part of the book, I talk about like how to deal with things like anger and guilt,
right?
Closure, self-sabotage in a way that aligns
spiritual
with the spiritual path. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spiritual bypassing and how to
yeah.
avoid
and
doing
I will give
that.
A,
yeah.
Our listeners a little, again, I loved your affirmations and I wrote some in my journal for, and this one actually I've been doing and it's quick. And so I'll just, give them an example of the type of affirmations you have. Eating is a sacred act that affirms our connection to the earth. Allowing ourselves to savor the pleasure of eating and delight in our bodies is part of the joy of being human. Eating well is a path to higher consciousness. That really spoke to me. So I wrote it in my journal.
I'm so glad to hear that.
It's something, I thought, I'm going to put that in my kitchen. I love that. Eating well is a path to higher consciousness. So,
absolutely.
So, do you have another book coming? Because I'm going to buy
your
first book. I love this book. So, do you have another book?
Thank you so much. Thank you. I mean, we'll see. I have an idea, but I'm going to let it sit for a little bit longer. And maybe if I still want to write it in, I don't know, 6 to 12 months, then I might. I have an idea. Maybe. So the answer is maybe.
So,
I actually, though, really want to work on an affirmation deck first. But, yeah, that's what's on deck.
Oh, I am a big affirmation deck. I'm a big oracle deck person. You talked about divination. Just pulling a goddess card makes me think. Do you know what I mean? It's like they say, well, any card you pull can have a meaning. That's okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just makes me think, like, you know, what's going on in my life? How is this appropriate to me? And so, I love things like that. And I think a lot of people who follow our path do. They use them as tools.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, and they're nice. They're portable. You can take them with you if you travel. I tend to travel a lot. So it's just
absolutely.
It's really nice. So was it hard? Are you, and I'm always interested in the creative process. Are you someone who said, okay, I'm going to write every Tuesday and Thursday, or did you write on the whim? How long did it take you? How did the book come about?
Okay, so this book in particular, it's funny because my first book and my second book were so different from each other.
Isn't that
basically,
fun?
Basically, what would you say?
I said, that's just so fun. It's so different.
Yeah, they were so different from each other. So this book actually started, I was going to do a series of guided meditations, which is what the affirmative talks came from. And then I realized, you know what, I actually think that this could and should be a book. And so I honestly wrote it in a sort of a blitz over like a 2-week period. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And now, but having said that, there was a lot of refinement because it wasn't in the best shape. You know, I sort of just got it all out in its original form and then, you know, sent it off and got feedback from the editors and really worked on it. It needed some tinkering, whereas my first book was more just sort of diligently organized, meticulously organized, and then I kind of wrote it that way. This was more like a flowing thing, and then I shaped it and tweaked it and moved stuff around. But also, I'll just say, that's my process as a writer in general. I write quickly, and then I edit slowly.
Oh, that's fun.
Which, that's just how it is with me. Yeah. I'll get it out there, and then I'll just, spend a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, again, your book was very besides being very factual and informative, it was very personal. It was very easy to read. It was very interesting. And, again, I really like the exercises and journal prompts. And I tell our listeners there's a lot of – this book has a lot of depth. So
thank you so much.
It was – again, I have found that myself and a lot of people have problems with books that are very heavy or deep and you don't know what to do with it. And this is something that – like I said, I wrote lots of notes and I have journal messages and say, I'm going to try this. And so, and it's also one of those books that I think you can, if you hit some rough patches in life or not feeling really good, this would be a really good book to grab, to read some chapters.
Absolutely.
To kind of, reframe what's going on in your life.
100%. Yeah. I'm so glad it resonated with you. Absolutely. And I agree. I think that it's, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to write this is because I have really benefited from books like that or talks like that. And, I just wanted to offer my version of that with what I, my particular experiences in training. But, I agree for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I knew this hour would fly by. I really enjoyed talking with you. And like I said, I really, really enjoyed your book. So tell us a little bit about your website, where everybody can find you. And I will give, I haven't checked you on TikTok, but I will give you a big compliment. I'm not a social media girl. I know, shame on me. I don't, not on it much, but I do go on Instagram. Your Instagram is excellent.
Thank you. Thank you.
Your
little
snippets is really good. So tell everybody where they can find you if they want to be a fan.
Yeah. Thank you. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. This is such a pleasure. I really enjoyed our conversation. And, okay, Instagram, it's Durgadas Alon Doriel. Twitter, it's Durgadas A. Doriel. TikTok is Durgadas Alon Doriel. And then I think Facebook is also Durgadas Alon Doriel. So if that's hard to spell, you can just Google Worthy As You Are, and then there, it's right there. So that's where I hang out. TikTok, I usually share therapy, soundbite-y kind of things, like things that I've learned as a therapist that tend to be effective in certain situations, how to work
that's
with
fun.
Anger.
I'm gonna have to,
how
I'm
to
not much of a TikTok girl, but I'm going to look you up.
Yeah, thank you. And then Instagram is usually sort of just inspirational thoughts or quotes that,
right. And they're excellent.
You know, that can be helpful. Thank you so much. Yeah. And then Facebook, honestly, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are pretty similar, except for I tell jokes on Twitter because that's just the nature of Twitter. Twitter is kind of like the bar of social media. But yeah, all my content, though, really is about promoting well-being through connecting with spirit and thinking in compassionate ways. Yeah.
Yeah. And remember, listeners, you can also purchase his books through llewellyn.com and probably Amazon and major retailers. So,
yes,
and good luck.
Yeah.
I hope
wherever
your book is very
sold.
Successful. And it,
thank
it
you
motivates
so
you
much.
To write more.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you again for having me on.
Well, besides Durgus, I'd like to thank David and Jeanette, our sound engineers, for their technical expertise. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Well, October is going to be a fun and spooky month for us. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, October 4th, and we'll be joined by author Corinne Kenner as she talks about her book, Gently Haunted. We will discover the playful annex of lingering souls and antiques with spirited personalities on Circle Talk as we talk about paranormal entities from a Florida antique shop and surrounding area. In her book, Gently Haunted, besides her haunted stories, she's also going to share tips for using pendulums, dowsing rods, and tarot cards to help you reach out to friendly spirits of the past. It's going to be so much fun, so please come back. I look forward to being with you all again, so please come back. We will now transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone. Be safe and blessed be.
One spirit in the dark, like a candle wavers. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community. community, a circle empowering you and me. The circle binds, yet sets us free. In the goddess name, so mote it be. One spirit in the dark, like a candle waver. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community, a circle empowering you and me. A circle binds, yet sets us free. In the goddess name, so mote it be. One spirit in the dark, like a candle waver. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community, a circle empowering you and me. The circle binds, yet sets us.